Okay. And I always start this recording early so then I don't forget. Because once we get going, I have a tendency to forget different things. So, how's the weather where each of you is?
Good.
And where is that at?
I'm in San Diego, so I'm near you. My weather is your weather.
Yep. Yeah, we're blessed out here. And how's the weather in Texas?
In Dallas, it's raining. We've had a heat wave, and now it just started the rain thing. So it's okay, it's not hot.
Well, please share some of that rain over here. That's the one thing that we really need. Early this year, we had lots and lots of rain compared to a normal year, but lately it's been almost none.
It's such a sad thing too, because so many people rely on the water, like your farming community, I mean your agriculture, and then the least water that's up north, the least water that goes south, like going into Mexico. And so that can be a big problem for a lot of people down the line.
Yeah.
You know what they've said? They go, sometime in the future, water will be a high commodity.
Oh,
Because
exactly.
right.
Yeah. Although here in Carlsbad, we just this year opened the largest desalinization plant in the U.S. and certainly haven't noticed any change in the water taste because of all the systems it goes through and everything. So,
That's
based on
wonderful.
big success, I think we're going to see a number of new ones started just here in Southern California, let alone around the U.S., where it's needed.
That is amazing. That is amazing.
So sometimes we do things right here in Carlsbad. I'm not always a fan of our local politics.
What is local politics in your neck of the woods?
Oh, it's San Diego's evolving from a what was at one time a rather conservative community into much more of a moderate and in some cases even progressive segments here and there.
So, what is your dilemma?
Oh, wait,
Sandy.
things are headed in the right direction. It's just taking too long and that kind of stuff.
Well, in our community, Ted Cruz is king. Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, I would think it's going to be interesting to see how Texas votes in this presidential election with all the things going on. Who just
Right.
came on? Hello, somebody came on?
Hello.
Oh, Rosie. This is Rosie. Sorry.
Hi, Rosie. So
Hi, good
Northern California is now represented.
Yes.
Hi, who came on?
Yes. Mary. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Okay, this is Victoria Rivera in New York.
Victoria. Okay, and who else?
Mary Andrade, San Jose, California.
Excellent. Okay, we'll wait another minute or so, then we'll do a quick self-introduction of everybody, and then we'll go into the topic.
Sounds good.
Kirk?
Yes.
May I ask a question about the assembly on September 10th or 8th? Oh, sorry.
Sure. Go ahead.
Are you still working on the program?
Till 2:30 last night.
Okay, and so we will be knowing more specifics soon.
Well, the reception starts at 5, the ceremony at 6. What specifically are you looking for?
I think it's the next day, Friday, exactly.
Okay, yes. And what we're looking at Friday, the bulk of Friday, the 9th, we will be filming various Latino Reads interviews. And then what I'm looking at is a session starting around noon and going for maybe an hour, hour and a half, where I'll cover certain topics that are always popular amongst authors. And then basically open it to any questions, answers, that kind of stuff, where it'll be more of a relaxed day. And because sometimes I know we get questions that we don't have time, like in the middle of the awards or a festival, to answer. And that way it's more of a casual getting answers and getting things clarified, as well as providing helpful input from all of you.
Okay, so in the morning, since I suppose a few of us will not have interviews, we are free, sort of.
Exactly. We will have that survey out here within the next, certainly by early next week. And I know a few of the authors that we're going to be doing interviews can only make it on that Thursday. And so for everybody that's staying, we will want to do those interviews on Friday and that.
Are you doing some on Saturday too?
Excuse me?
Are you doing some on Saturday too?
Well, in your case, I don't want to say yes overall, because there, it's going to be too many during an
Georgette.
During the conference, it's a little hard to say we're going to do a lot. We can do one or two, and we'll certainly look at you, Rosie, to be one of those. So don't worry. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
You had talked about some panel idea. Is that going to be pursued or not?
The panel, the people that had offered to be panelists turned out to be, that was really what they wanted as a topic, not what they were felt that they were at this point equipped to speak about.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that.
Okay. They had responded saying that they would be interested in being on a panel on a certain topic, and then in reality they wanted to see a panel on a certain topic because they wanted that kind of information. So they were asking for information, not offering it.
Oh, wow.
So what's the bottom line about that then?
So on Friday it will be, and that's where we will have that out to you with a specific title here by early next week. with the one, but I'm looking right at that 11 o'clock or noon slot on Friday for that to happen. And it'll be back at Cal State Dominguez Hills.
Okay, so I hope that we get a little more clarity as time goes on through an email or whatever about exactly what is the program for Friday.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Friday is not so much a program day. That will be the only fixed activity aside from doing the interviews, because with those interviews, we have quite a number that we need to do that day. So that's why, and Georgette that joined a little while ago will be one of those helping on that. Why don't we shift into the topic here? And somebody's phone has a lot of background noise. If you're not speaking, if you can mute your phone. But what I'd first like to do is go around and have everybody do a very short introduction of themselves, maybe where they're from, what their book is, and that type of a thing. But just
can you remind us how to mute our phone? Remind me how to mute the phone.
Yes, to mute your phone, it's *6.
Okay, thanks. So I'm about to mute my phone. Do you want me to talk first?
Georgette.
Okay, just what are we talking about? Okay, hi, I'm Georgette. I do mostly children's bilingual books and music. I'm helping Kirk with some of the videos of the authors that we'll be doing on Friday, and I look forward to meeting all of you.
And she's also working on the Empowering Speakers Bureau efforts. So she's a great person.
And I've known Kirk since the inception, since our very first Latino Book and Family Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to *6 now.
Excellent. Okay. One.
Hi. I'm Mary Andrade. I'm a self-publisher. I have published several books bilingual on the celebration of Day of the Dead in Mexico. And I'm happy to be at this moment with you all together, and thank you, Kurt, for putting together this webinar.
Thank you. Next.
This is Delia Huffman. I lived in the Midwest, Indiana, the majority of my life, and now I'm living in Dallas, Texas. My background is very multicultural, and I really thank you for everyone being on the call and learning new things. Thank you, Kurt.
Okay. Next.
Well, I'm Victoria Rivera. I live in New York from Puerto Rico, and I have written a memoir. So I look forward to meeting you all, I hope, and share more about our journey as writers and what kind of help we can provide each other as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, hi. I'm Albert Kiwis. I'm here in the Phoenix area, and I started writing about 5 years ago. I wrote Sophia's Awesome Tamale Day, and since then I've written 4 more books, and it's become a series. It's Sophia's Adventures and Pepe the Parrot. So I'm trying to motivate children to be inspired about their culture, traditions, and being proud of their heritage. So thank you for inviting me.
Excellent.
Hi, I'm Sharon Allen, and I'm in San Diego, California. I was researching for several years on the feminicides in Mexico, Central and South America, and as a result, and through a series of meeting people, I decided to turn a group's story into a novel, and that's what I'm working on now.
Excellent. Okay. I know there's more beyond there.
Hi. Hi, I'm Rosie Ochoa, and I'm from Northern California, from Woodland, and I'm the author of 3 poetry books, and my latest one is called La Belleza de Ser Mujer, and it's a bilingual edition of my first book. And I also have a funny book, and it's called Jimmy Fallon Lip Sync Scene Despite Life. And that's like a really funny book. And I'm just looking to inspire young people to do what they want and do more writing, I guess, and art.
Excellent. Okay.
Hi, right, one more. Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Esther Reyes Jones from Laguna Niguel, California. I've written my first book, which is a children's book, bilingual for third, fourth graders. And my goal here is to write a series on La Señora with the Blue Lipstick. It's based partly on the fact that I am a retired educator, and so she's a teacher. I like the idea of doing it bilingually, both to encourage youngsters that are reading or writing in Spanish and learning English, and for those in English that want to learn Spanish. So this is my first attempt, and I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. Okay. Any last person? All right. Well, we appreciate all of you attending. Just one last quick question, and just say yes when you fit into this category. How many of you are self-published?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. How many of you are with a smaller publisher? And are any of you with a medium or larger publisher?
Yes.
Okay. So the majority are self-published, it sounds like, on this call. This is the first session we're going to do of a 3-part series on distribution. And the majority of this one focuses on the history of book distribution, because really to see where we are today, you have to understand that history. And that really helps, I think, in many ways clarify it. And that certainly fits in many other things, and especially is true here. Much has changed from when we first published our book in 1983. And there's several evolutions, some for the better, some for the worse, that have happened since then. One of the first things before we get into those different evolutions, there's 3 key audiences for most types of books. Consumers is the one that most of us think about first. You know, families, if you have a kid's book, or adults, if you have that fiction, nonfiction, whatever. But those are the key audience, and that will be the bulk of this session. Then there's the education market, and within the education market, there's really 2 key sectors. One is the schools, and then the second, which is totally different, is the college market. And then each of those sectors has 3 segments to it. There's textbooks, there are required books, and then there's support books. A book like Rudy Anaya's Bless Me Ultima is required text in over 500 colleges and that. So you can see that if you get into one of those niches, just by being in that niche, you can have tremendous success. And then the third major audience for books is libraries. And this is a very up-and-down audience. Over the past 2 decades, there were periods where the library segment was purchasing almost no books at all for several years because of financial constraints and that kind of stuff. Right now, we're actually in a good period for the library industry, and actually the American Library Association's convention is now larger than Book Expo America. And that. And I'll go more into the conferences in a minute. Is there any questions on this first part here? Okay. Perhaps the biggest thing that has evolved over the years is number of books published. Looking back over the last four decades, if you went to 1980, there were roughly 200,000 books published. 1990, roughly the same number. 2000, it maybe grown to around 250,000, a relatively small increase. By 2010, the number of titles published annually had grown to, by 2010, had grown to 1 million, and today it's getting close to 2 million unique titles. That's a phenomenal increase, unmatched in almost any kind of business to see that kind of a growth. New technologies are a part of that increase, pent-up demand from tens of thousands of authors who wanted to get their books published by traditional matters. There's a whole number of reasons that that increase has happened. But if you went back to 1980, there were probably 300 books published with a Latino author each year in the entire United States. So virtually none. It was not hard to know a third of all the authors out there. Today, in 2016, there's roughly 25,000 titles published a year by a Latino author. So phenomenal.
How much is that?
25,000.
Wow.
Titles. And so it's been a huge evolution. Now, in the 1980s and 90s, at least half all titles published would sell a minimum of 100 copies, and 40% were probably getting meaningful distribution. So your odds of getting out there into a large number of hands was better if you were following certain procedures and that kind of stuff. Today, over 85% of all titles published will never sell 100 copies. Probably
how many?
50%,
today?
85% of those approaching 2 million titles will never sell 100 copies. And probably 40-50% will never even sell 10 copies. It's that kind of a situation today. Far less than 5% of published titles today will ever get meaningful distribution to bookstores. Just a fraction of that overall number.
So okay. I have a question about that.
Sure.
So how do you, is the volume of people publishing taking away from the opportunities? And then the second question to that is, how do we overcome that?
Well, that's what this is all about.
Okay.
That's why we're doing this series, because the number one question that everybody in your shoes asks is, how can I sell more copies? And that. And there is, to be right up front, honest, and those of you like Mary that have known me for decades, know that there is no easy answer to it. But I think out of this series, we can collectively work on what I think is going to be an answer for a couple of the sectors that we're going to be talking about.
Okay.
Connect. But that's why I think everybody's on the call. Okay. How major publishers found new authors. In the 1980s and 90s, major book publishers we're honestly looking for new authors. One client that I worked with around 1990 was a spiritual book publisher, Llewellyn, out of Minnesota. They wanted to know more about the overall viability of the Latino market. They liked what I shared with them, and they started translating a variety of books. They had success in both here and in Latin America with those titles. And then around 1995, the Latino who headed their Spanish language division gave me a call and asked, this may sound like a dumb question, but are there Latinos who write? And, you know, instantly I was ready to scream at her and that, but sit there and we helped find some authors for her in that segment. And let's see, she'd been in the field for 4 years and really had not noticed what was going on around her. They hired a total of 4 authors to do books, and 3 of those 4 authors went on to sell over 100,000 copies of the books. So it really was an eye-opener for them. And that other major houses in the late 1990s and early 2000s were also looking for Latino authors for the first time. While the number of Latino authors brought into the major houses at that time was relatively small, often the authors they found are still leaders in the industry today. And that's the key thing. Once you get your foot in a segment and you have significant sales, there will be a publisher for you. But the days of major publishers going out and hunting for an unpublished author are basically gone. You know, if you're president of the United States or something like this and you've never, for whatever reason, published a book, yes, you're going to get a very nice offer to you know, have your book published. But for that person that is that next generation of great writers, the major publishing houses, by and large, aren't looking for you. What the major publishers are looking for is they're looking for who's having success either with the small houses or self-publishing, and seeing either significant sales or key awards happening, and then they're willing to talk to you. That's really what's going on there. Okay, now getting into the number of distributors. In the 1980s and 90s, there were well over 100 meaningful book distributors in the U.S., and these were book distributors targeting the booksellers in the U.S. For decades, the American Book Association, and then they sold their conference to Reed changed the name to Book Expo America, was by far the largest book industry conference in the U.S. Its exhibitors were book publishers and distributors, and its attendees were the thousands of booksellers of various types from around the U.S. And so there would be 100 or more meaningful distributors at the Book Expo exhibiting and that. You'd see these distributors with booths to let booksellers and bookstores at that time know about their services. If you met certain requirements, odds were very good that you could find meaningful distribution.
Can I just say, and that's where, at the Latino Book and Family Festival booth, my Galapagos book got picked up by a distributor.
Excellent.
Mm. That's great.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Now that
on
was
that.
Was that the one in Chicago?
I'm too old to remember where I was, but yeah. We had a big booth. I got picked up by Follett. and they bought from me for years. And they, well, they, because they know I exist, I have so many products, they still buy from me when they need.
Excellent. And Follett is actually primarily for the library industry. So we'll get into the, in the next session, we'll get into the other kinds of distribution. But wonderful story. Now Georgette has one thing aside from her writing skills going for her. As a musician, she was sitting there playing at our booth, and that helped attract attention also.
I'm a performer, so I get to distribute my flyers at all of my performances, and that increases my sales. So my things are constantly not moving fast, but they move.
You can accuse Georgette of being many things. Quiet is not one of them.
And I'm training while I'm on this conference call, so that's why you hear me huffing and puffing.
Okay. Book Expo today takes up only 40% of the exhibit space it once occupied in around 2000. So it has shrunk significantly. And booksellers attending now represent less than 25% of the audience. Today, Book Expo is lucky if they have 10 distributors exhibiting. And those bookstores that in the past were looking for the next great title are instead figuring, how do I sell the books that I have now? When I last went to Book Expo 2 years ago, I had 44 meaningful conversations. I sit there and I mark business cards, code them different ways. I was very happy. But of those 44 conversations, not a single one was with a bookseller. Times have really changed. And that. Distribution.
When I got into the business long ago, there were a lot of independent bookstores, and they are all gone now. I used to write them all and send them info, and then they would buy from me that way across the country. And I'd say 95% of them don't exist anymore. And that's the same with the big publishers. A lot of them have eaten each other up. You know, they've consolidated. Houghton Mifflin and Macmillan, they've all kind of shrunk and become one big publisher.
Yeah.
So times have changed, and hopefully we change with them.
Distributors to booksellers. Here's how book distribution worked in the 1980s and 90s compared with today. For bookseller distribution, with our Hispanic scholarship directory, we went out to two different distributors targeting booksellers. We would annually ship with each new edition 4,000 to 6,000 copies of the books to them. The two huge problems of the formula that existed at that time was storage and shipping. Most of the distributors had massive warehouses storing hundreds of thousands or millions of books. Publishers paid a monthly storage cost for the books not sold. In terms of shipping, it was even worse. Books were shipped by the publisher from the printer to the distributor. Some publishers even had the book shipped to themselves first and then to the distributor. Then the distributor would often ship the books to wholesalers and then finally to bookstores or comparable outlets. Each book was shipped 2 to 4 times. And each time you ship a book, figure that's taking roughly somewhere between 4 to 7% of your final gross revenue goes away each time. So if you're sitting there and you're shipping it 4 times, right there, you've easily lost 20-25% of the revenue that you're going to get. Then, because the publishers have to pay for the shipping, And printing was less at the time, but that shipping certainly was expensive. In the early and mid 2000s, all of that changed as dozens of distributors went out of business every single year. Others merged, and today there's only a handful of what once existed. So that whole segment, as evolution of book selling, and in the next webinar I'm going to go into where books are primarily sold today, and that, because back in the 80s and early 90s, 70% of all books sold in the U.S. were at bookstores and other outlets along those lines. Today, it is a small fraction of that number, and that. One of the other things that happened at that particular time with many of these major distributors, when you'd ship off several thousand books to them, they would not often give you a report at all on the sales for 9 months. So you had no idea really what was happening, what the plan and trends, and that's really one of the things that now you can definitely get feedback much quicker through a variety of ways on how well a book is doing. And that. And of course, what we're talking here is for that smaller publisher and those kind of things. If you are a major publisher, you've got your own internal distribution mechanisms and that. And that's why with the five major book publishing houses, that some of them have as many as 200 or more imprints underneath them. Could somebody mute their noise there? Okay. And it's star six to mute. Okay. But it's been a major evolution that's gone on, and I got very frustrated in the mid-2000s, like 2004, 5, 6, as sales were just dropping because, well, 1 year, one of the distributors we were working with for a decade went out of business, and then a year or two later, the other one went out of business. And one of those two didn't even tell us they were going out of business, and we never got the final checks and that kind of stuff. And so it was a not too pleasant time. But now with the evolution that's gone on, and that's what we'll be focusing on that next, there are more opportunities and that. But you have to also work harder to make those happen. You know, it was great sitting there shipping off 5,000 books or whatever to a place and then ultimately getting a very nice check for those books. But we're in a different day now. Is there any other questions on this topic today?
I wanted to make a comment, Kirk, because one other thing besides the distributors that we used to have catalogs. And catalogs... Mm-hmm. You know, used to carry books and used to go to libraries and families, and a lot of things were sold that way, and those catalogs kind of disappeared too.
Yes. And so many things have gone online and that.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
No, my comment is that my publisher is in England, and it's all done through the Internet. We don't have any personal contacts whatsoever or even phone calls. But in terms of distribution, they have, you know, they distribute through main distributors. However, they pay 10% to the author of the first 1,000 books. And then if you sell from 1,000 to 10,000, you might get 25% of what they get. So it's, you know, I have sold about $2,000, so I get $200 out of that. But I have invested in the book thousands of dollars.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it's not a money making situation.
Kirk, I have a question, please.
Sure.
Okay. Because my area of interest is mental health, I don't know if you've already spoken in previous conference calls about writing proposals so you can go on the road and speak about a certain topic. Because it's involved in the book I've written. So have you spoken about that part of the business?
No, but that, in your sector there, that is a great way to approach it. And actually, that's a perfect topic for a future session. One of the things that, as somebody like Mary Andrade that who comes from the newspaper field, her and her husband have been in that side of publishing for decades, and that's where I first met them. With the books that I've done, where I've either authored or had a major role in putting them together, probably more than half of them have either carried ads or been sponsored. And that's a great alternative to look at, because then you sit there and you've actually made money before you sell your first copy.
And, right.
But we can certainly do a workshop in the future on that.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
And where did you say that was? I'm sorry.
Okay. That is really either sponsored books or advertising in books. And it goes beyond that, but those are the type of things to consider.
Okay.
Yeah, as Kirk mentioned, I had a sponsorship of some of my books from the Office of Tourism of Mexico, of the different states. And I usually receive certain amount of money to put the advertisement at the end of the book promoting tourism to that particular state. And also I compromised myself sending them like 200 books. And I had a lot to do a special a run of one of my children's books, The Vigil of the Little Angels, that was translated from Spanish to Purépecha, the indigenous language of the people of Michoacán. And they paid for the whole run. I kept like 300 books for myself, but it was a good accomplishment knowing that my books were in the library of many of the little towns in Michoacán.
Nice.
And in Mary's case, she's not only a multi-winner here with the International Latino Book Awards, she has won the highest writing honors in Mexico and that. So
wow.
She's really an accomplished writer and photographer.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but as Kirk mentioned, at the beginning of publishing my books, I had good sales every year. But later, the sales dwindle. And I keep a few distributors, but those are mainly the Mexican museums of art in different parts of the United States who celebrate the tradition of Day of the Dead, and they ask for books every year. But it's different of what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, there are some answers that hopefully we're going to be able to do some key things. Because one of the key things, since almost all of you on this call are award-winning authors, it's that is one of those things that helps elevate you and separate you from those 25,000 other books by Latinos this year and that. So is there any other questions?
Is this a topic that will be addressed again in the questions and answers on Saturday, on Friday?
This can certainly, sure, in terms of topics, that's going to be sort of a session that where people can bring up whatever and we can sit there and talk on it and that.
And are you still a publisher or not?
Yes.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
That's very good to know, so I hope I can talk to you. When I am there.
I would like to know, how did that, I don't know what her name is, but she just spoke about having her book sponsored in Mexico. I was wondering how she managed to figure that out, or if she had a connection here in the U.S. first, or how did that work out?
That was Mary Andrade.
Before asking for the support of the publication of the book, I have been going to different parts of Mexico doing the research of the celebration of the Day of the Dead. Mm-hmm. After going a year, the next year, I follow up with photographs, sending them to the Office of Tourism, and establishing a good relationship with the people in the office. Mm-hmm. And later, as the need came to have more information about the celebration published in both languages, English and Spanish, I approached them in Mexico. I made a proposal of the publication of the book, mentioning all the positive aspects of it. And they took it to their employees, and they agreed to do it. So they said, okay, we're going to send you the advertisement. And once the book was published, they wrote the check for that advertisement and the books that I provided to them. Mm. But it was all the contact was direct to the offices of tourism of Michoacán, and Mexico City, which were the states that had support of my publication.
Very nice.
Mary's a very hard worker, and she developed a series of unique relationships because of that hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And that really has helped her in a variety of ways. Okay. Well, I appreciate all of this. I look forward to seeing most of you at the International Latino Book Awards on September 8th and or the festival on the 10th, and as well as the activities that we'll have on the 9th, and we'll have out very shortly on the 9th, which will primarily be the Latino Read sign-up and that kind of stuff.
Thank you again. Kirk, how do we look you up in terms of publishing?
let's do that offline. And actually, between now and these events, I have no time to really think about anything other than what we
But you do have a website, I imagine, right?
Yeah, let's talk about it later. Okay?
Okay.
Alrighty.
Okay, sure. Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you all. Take care.
Thank you, Kirk. Thank you,
Kirk.
Thank you, Kirk.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hope I didn't talk too much. Oh, he's gone. Thank you.
Okay.